Now, for something completely different, the broadcasting veteran who taught Joe Rogan absolutely nothing, Brian Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and people of all sexes, especially those of you suffering TWS, Tucker Withdrawal Syndrome. Hey, it's time once again to enjoy the sensation of 1,000 fleas nesting in your armpits as Tucker recommended the two and only return for your weekly inoculations of parsing predatory propaganda with a few precious minutes of podcasting punditry, tomfoolery, verbal chaos, and marinated mayhem scooped fresh from the honeypots of the DC swamp and our modern-day Tower of Babel known as the mainstream media. Brian Wilson's my name, reasonably certain you know who you are, and joined once again by best-selling author, journalist, a New York Post secret weapon, and recently terminated spokesmodel for Burma Shave, James, just call me Mr. Bovard.
Thanks. That's the third week in a row we get a beard reference, but, you know, Me and Rodney Dangerfield, I'm used to it.
I got to keep it. I'm on a roll now. I see if we can keep this up for the rest of the year. Here we are in the riptide of the Tucker Carlson termination. And, and by the way, we'll get to our new feature, Speculation for Clarification, later. But first, more big media news. Yesterday, in the heart of prime afternoon drive time, my partner here was a guest expert commentator on one of my broadcasting alma maters, the 50,000-watt Clear Channel New York City Heritage Station, WABC, where they grilled him all too briefly, in my opinion, on his most recent verbal hand grenade in the New York Post that asked the musical question, when did being creditworthy become a federal crime? The opening line to Biden's mortgage equity will screw up the home buying public. And boy, did it. So as a public service, I pulled up your segment, James, and edited out some of the brilliant commentary of the hosts and got right down to the real nitty gritty. Here is Jim Bovard's WABC New York debut.
This is stunning. Explain this to folks out there and how it's going to affect their pocketbook and why this is so disproportionate.
The Biden administration has a new rule that is forcing banks and mortgage companies to penalize people with good credit ratings in order to subsidize people who have bad credit records or have a bad record of paying their debts. And this is a Biden's idea of social justice. But this is going to show up as an extra $60 or more a month for 30 years on people's mortgage payments. As I commented in the piece today, the thing they should do is have a line on the mortgage settlement document saying this is a social justice surtax, because that's why the Biden people are doing it, and they're basically treating being creditworthy as if it was a federal crime.
Well, Mr. Bovard, they would never do that because they want to do this stuff in secrecy. So much of we're losing so much of our rights through these executive orders. And we don't have anybody that's really sitting down and scrutinizing every executive order that comes out of the branch.
Or administrative rules.
Administrative rules. Exactly. Because stuff like this should go to the Congress. It should be debated and voted on, not slipped in somewhere in an executive order.
And something like this should have a regulatory impact statement in which people can make a comment, publicly comment on the regulation before it's imposed. But this is a complete travesty, and it also ignores the long history of federal policies that have basically subsidized borrowers with bad credit ratings, leading them to bankruptcy. I mean, going back to the 2008 credit crash.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking about too. Right.
That's something that was devastating for Black and Hispanic homeowners. It wiped out half the median net worth for Blacks and Hispanics. And it's kind of ironic to have some of the same people pushing the same policies now and acting like they had nothing to do with a complete disaster for low-income borrowers in the early 2000s.
And Mr. Bovard, and doesn't this distort housing availability for everyone and the housing market and the value of property as well?
Yeah, this is something which is, there are huge perils on this, partly because in a lot of areas in the U.S., home values are now falling. So what's happening is you got the Biden administration trying to pull in relatively low-income homeowners with bad credit into buying a house and the value of that house is could be falling pretty quickly, and especially if folks are getting these houses with zero down payment, then very quickly they're underwater, and it's a lot easier for them just to walk away. And when that happens, it often ruins neighborhoods. That was a huge factor after 2008. So many moderate-income neighborhoods were devastated by all the housing abandonment.
And there you have it, 110% right on the money. And I'm sure that the people in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Long Island, Rhode Island, the southern portions of Massachusetts, even up into Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, and down into Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and D.C. were amazed and enthralled. How about
it? I don't know if they were amazed and enthralled, but I hope some of them listened.
Oh, well, I mean, that's coverage area. That's one thing. Hey, if they ever call you up and ask you to be on at night, take it, because then you've got everything from Canada to Florida. Just entirely down the East Coast on that station. But I had a couple of questions real quick. Is this whole thing reviewable, stoppable, adjudicatable, or is it just something that the new king can do with impunity?
My understanding is that the Biden administration has the leverage, has leeway to write these mortgage rules as they please, that the Federal Housing Finance Agency can say what it wants, and then Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will hop to, and that it's simply, it's a done deal. It might be possible to challenge it by a lawsuit. I don't know. But a number of commentators have said, you know, this is the worst time to do this because the housing industry is already looking pretty damn shaky. Yeah. People are already kind of spooked by the falling prices. And then all of a sudden people show up at the, see that HUD settlement one, that form at the closing. And, oh, wait a minute, we just got screwed by Uncle Sam. But it's kind of, you know, it's confusing, and it's going to confuse buyers. It's going to piss a lot of people off. And the feds have not thought this through, but it's simply it's a Biden speaking point. So it might show up in his next video for his reelection campaign.
Yeah, how exciting will that be? Well, I guess you could call it the Robin Hood program. You know, you just take from the rich, give to the poor. Everybody's happy. If I can't pay off your student loan, then maybe I can pay off your mortgage. And I was thinking about that, too, with the normal home buying season almost upon us. It'll be noteworthy to see how history repeats itself, or better yet, how we consistently don't learn from it. But actually, we do learn from it. It's the morons and psychopaths consistently elected as leaders with the learning disability. But it'll be interesting to see if anybody stands up and says, hold it. I would think that, you know, all these people have got their lobbyists, you know, the builders, the real estate agents, and all the rest of that. You'd think they'd want to step into that since the average American doesn't have a lobby. So.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how much controversy this policy generates. It's a real, you know, the simple baseline is giving somebody a mortgage that they can't afford can ruin their life. And that happened a lot in the early 2000s. It's going to happen again. It's already happening with some other federal policies and preferences. But the media really hasn't tied the pieces together. But most of the journalists, I wondered if there's a hiring requirement at the Washington Post and New York Times that people have to prove they failed Econ 101 in order to get hired.
Yeah.
But if you look at the actual policies and the history of the policies, it seems like, well, this is a really bad idea. But, there's some nice phrases which are thrown out to, like holy water on the policy. And
well, if you pointed out in the past, as long as you're giving people something for free, they're going to say, oh, terrific, I'll take it. You know, and there's a lot of statistics that points out the demographics, the racial disparities between who's got a good credit rating and who doesn't, who pays their bills, who doesn't, who pays their mortgage, who doesn't. And it doesn't come out real favorably for the minority. So that means you can't say anything about it. You'd be a racist, right?
Well, and it's unfortunate that the Biden people think that the solution is to basically veto the credit ratings and pressure banks and mortgage companies to give mortgages to people with a credit rating that indicates that they might have trouble paying off the mortgage. Because, you know, the same thing happened under Clinton administration and George W. Bush. And it devastated the people that politicians promised to rescue.
Yeah, what about the fact that when they went in there, You know, so you give somebody something for nothing in the form of like this payment down, this whatever. And even when you've got a 620 credit score and you get a mortgage for a mini manse and then you don't pay that, well, now your credit score is going to go down even more. So what do? Do you go back and buy a bigger house because you got a lower credit score? Is that the way it works? It's really kind of fascinating. And wait a minute, what about, didn't they do this with cars? Didn't they do this with cars back then, too? You said that you wanted to buy an Escalante, but you didn't have a down payment, so they went in and gave it to you anyway with payments that went out beyond the depreciation value of the vehicle at low interest rates. Wasn't that another stunt that they pulled that kind of screwed up the automobile industry?
Might have been. I've not been in the market for the top-scale cars. So
Still?
I had a really nice Ford Contour, which I paid cash for when I bought it quite a few years ago. And that was, it was fun to bargain with a car dealer on a car that had been sitting on his lot for a long time and just sit there and pull out the checkbook and write out the number and hand him over the check. And he looks at the check and he says, well, that's not the right amount. So I said to him, don't you want to sell the car? Is it my beard? Is it my hat? Why won't you sell me the car? Well, that's not the price. You want to sell the car? You got the check. It's in your hand.
That's the price today. So did he take it? Of course he did.
He eventually did. He kind of pissed and moaned, and he had his boss come in and try to talk sense to me, and I'm just kind of like, it's a usual thing. Mr. Bovard, how would you like to drive this car home today? I said, it's a pretty nice car. My Honda Civic with a stick shift handles a little better, but, the Ford is good. It's good, but... So you don't want that check? Shall I just take it back? No, wait a minute.
I always love it when they can bring the bus. Well, I have to go talk to my sales manager about this. No, you don't. You have to go to the bathroom. You're not going back there talking to anybody. You know what you can do. It's just I sold Fords back in, before I got into radio, back in 1964, 65. I had a chance to sell the new Mustang when it came out. And I sucked. I sucked at it. I couldn't do it. I knew that the minimum deal they would take would be $50 over cost. And the window sticker was $1,500 over cost. Nobody wanted to pay. So I said, all right, fine. I'll take $50 over cost. I didn't think, what's it? Anyway, that doesn't matter. As I mentioned earlier, it is safe to say our media consuming society at large remains rocked and shocked by the summary dismissal of Tucker Carlson, now former host of the formerly number one show on cable, with the usual bland parted company, thanks for your service and other banalities. His 3 million plus viewers are demanding to know what the hell's going on. I suggested to Jim, I thought we had a bit of an obligation here to address the subject today. We're in the business. A little time has passed to consider the cacophony of opinions flooding social and anti-social media. So first to you, Jim, what are your thoughts?
Well, we talked about this pre-show, and I don't know what the hell's going on. It's strange. It seems that, folks have said, well, Fox News is doing an imitation of Bud Light, as far as torpedoing their own product. And I can see why people would think that. I don't know the background. Hopefully we'll find out more about this. But the thing that I want to hear is the Brian Wilson stories of his famous exes from talk radio stations and beyond. Well, yeah. You got good stories.
Well, I appreciate it. That's why I wrote the book. And I did, as I wrote in the in my tepid selling book, 50 Years, 50 Stories in Radio. I was fired by my best count. I was fired 8 times. Some of the most creative and cowardly ways one could imagine, even with a broadcasting career. Most of the incidents involved money. I wanted more. They refused. That wasn't actually being fired, though. They just wouldn't or couldn't afford me, and I couldn't afford to stay on their terms. So I moved on. They stayed put and suffered accordingly. So there was that. Of course, there were those acrimonious times when I was terminated for conduct unbecoming, like telling the boss to take his job and shove it because I refused to comply with some muddle-headed, asinine, personally demeaning programming command that sprung from the bowels of his demented ego and not the great broadcasting instruction manual. I want you to do the show standing on your head, whistling Dixie with a mouthful of graham crackers. Okay.
Okay.
Why? You're the boss. You know, I'm just the heavily paid employee. Why? Is that going to improve my ratings? Is that going to improve my time spent listening? Is that going to garner me a new section of people in a different demographic? Why? Why? You're asking me. You're fired. That is a shortened version of getting fired from one of the highest paying jobs I had in my career by a short program director with severe ego problems, kind of a Napoleonic complex, and he had absolute obedience from everybody else on the staff, and brought me in to do what I do, and he couldn't take it. He couldn't take having been asked why. That was just totally offensive, and I was in it. It's all right, you know. I went on to bigger and better things, and that was it. I was canned from my first job. I was canned 6 months into my first job, my first radio job, back in 1965. The office manager, Hazel Smith, took exception to something I did on that. Not that I remembered. I did took exception to something I did on the air. She comes barging into the control room with her prodigious size, bellows her personal displeasure at me, and told me to cut it out. I said, well, Brad Garino's our boss. And when he tells me to cut it out, then I'll consider it. Meanwhile, all your big freight back to your cubby hole, and my record's almost over. Well, sure enough, Brad returned to the station about 20 minutes later, got a big earful from Foghorn Hazel, comes into the control room, and without any discussion, he said, you're fired. Get your stuff. Hazel has your check. Okay? So, interestingly of that, I ran into Brad 12 years later when I'd been hired up in Atlanta and big, you know, rising star and all that crap. And he was all gushy, you know, big grin, introduced me to his wife and kids. We were at the airport, yada, yada, yada. He thought firing me was the best thing that ever happened to me. I said, yeah, maybe you ought to write a book about that. So it was, there was that. And in other adventures in employment that I wrote about, I detail how I was fired by fax machine, answering machine, registered letter, telegram, telephone, and through my agent. And once in an actual face-to-face. I sued most of the time, and I won most of the time for breach of contract, and always moved on to something bigger and better. And that's just the way it is with the gods of radio. Now, why and how Tucker got canned, nobody's going to know that for sure unless or until he tells the story himself. And I'll tell you in a second why that may not happen for a long, long time. But since this is our new speculation for clarification feature, here's my best shot. He was on record as saying disparaging things about people. So what? It's Major League Broadcasting. Anyone who thinks they get to that level and retain their emotional virginity doesn't belong there, including Gen Z snowflakes and the terminally naive. But many of those emailed comments ran from being actionable to tarnishing the Fox product. That means money, combined with legal losses, disgruntled employees, and egos so big they've got their own zip codes. That can only engender more of the same with future lawsuits pending. Pulling the plug makes some business sense. Bashing the owner and his kids in print skips over stupid and goes right to full potato. That was not brilliant at all. And I've come to understand that, especially among the young Murdochs, there's been a growing resentment between the news and talk show personnel that blend into the air product. Story selection, news coverage. And there's no need to elaborate there. If you've worked in any size business, you've probably dealt with the same issues. The egos and vanities permeating the broadcast business are way more flammable and toxic than, say, Dunkin' Donuts or the Virginia Highway Department. But without fair and balanced management, leadership, and good personal communications, disaster is just a commercial breakaway. And so it was. As to why we may not be hearing anything of substance from Tucker, this is unconfirmed, but not unlikely when it comes to broadcasting skullduggery. The possibility exists, has been offered by a source, that Tucker's contract may contain a non-disparagement clause. Now, for the uninitiated, that's different from the more common and mostly unsuccessful non-compete clauses I've signed in my career, mostly radio TV contracts. They're nearly not worth anything. They're just scary looking. Essentially, a non-disparagement clause means you can't say anything bad or disparaging about me, us, the broadcast entity, whomever, for the balance of your contract. If you do, all hell will rain down on you in the form of lawsuits, legal fees, and major butthurt. Now, if that clause exists, what that really means is you're not going to be hearing anything from Tucker Carlson about the run-up to the 2024 elections, and some people believe that's a very big deal. The other rumored tidbit is some Fox corporate also-ran with a big title and a big ego and no exposure, claims to have an OPPO research file on everybody just for times like these and would use it accordingly if Tucker mouthed off. Personally, I think that has the odor of self-aggrandizement all over it, but as noted, it's an unsubstantiated odor waiting, wafting, floating through the media sphere, and not an unlikely action by somebody if they had the guts to pull it off. Outside of that, I know nothing. And if you want to know more about my exciting ways of being terminated, grab a copy of the book.
Going back to your point about the non-disparagement clause, you know, that's the same trouble I have when I try to write about the Biden administration.
Yeah, but did you have a non-disparagement clause in your contract with whoever it was, Random House or Reader's Digest or Mad Magazine, whoever you were writing for at the time?
I was making a joke. It didn't work.
No, you're a journalist. You don't do jokes. I keep telling everybody that. Once a year, you get one good line a year. That's your allotment.
Okay. I might have had those clauses in publishing contracts. I don't recall. I don't think I did. But it hasn't stopped me from saying what I think about the wonderful publicity job some publishers have done.
I would be amazed if you didn't know it was there and it was there and they didn't come at you. Well, that just raises your worth. But if it wasn't there and they listened to this podcast, you might want to check your next contract for whether or not it'd be in there. I wouldn't touch something like that with a 10-foot pole. I mean, you're gagged forever. And it's hard enough. Like, look at Tucker. That's one of the really instructive things about the way this business works for the people who aren't in it. So he's on the air five nights a week, and he's pounding these people, pounding other media outlets for their dereliction, for their bias and all the rest. And he's on target. It's bullseye, 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 bullseye. And they can't say a word. David Muir is not going to start off his evening news with, just let me reply to Tucker Carlson. You know, that's not going to happen. Lester Holt, the girl over at CBS, that's not going to happen. So when he gets thrown under the bus like this, now it's free ride. Now it's like, you know, full speed ahead. And as I think I said the other day, He, David Muir, started this evening news. The lead story was Tucker Carlson being terminated. He got all his little digs in, all his little innuendos, and he went on. And I found out from Cassie later that apparently Lester Holt and whoever she is at CBS, you know, did pretty much all the networks did the same thing. Because now they got a 00 prefix to just blast the crap out of this guy who's been dumping on him for 2 years. And whether it's lies or bullshit, and most of it is distortions and, you know, calling him a misogynist and a racist and all the rest of that, that's their thing. That's their thing, because they get off on emotional reaction, not logic and reason. And so they're going to go to the butthurt rather than anything that holds water.
I think I read somewhere that Fox might have Carlson under contract for the next year and a half or longer, which could preempt him from setting up shop elsewhere or even on his own. I don't know if that's accurate.
Well, that would be a non-compete more than anything else. And like I say, those things generally aren't worth the paper they're written on. I got to figure at his level, with his income, with his money, with his attorneys, he never would have put up with that. So if your non-disparagement clause was in there and they didn't come at you, then hooray for you. But I would really, never having had to deal with anything like that in broadcasting in my career, if some station somewhere is dumb enough to want to pick me up somewhere, I would be, I'd really look for that with a very large magnifying glass. I do want to, again, encourage everyone to do their Christmas shopping with Jim Bovard's books in mind. There's a bunch of them hanging out at Books A Million, like Terrorism and Tyranny, which sounds scary, and it is. The good thing is it'll be the only book quivering on the bookshelf. This year, shop early and avoid the stampede in the book section at Bed Bath & Beyond, because that's going away in a double-quick hurry. For teeny tiny budgets, my minuscule collection of books is still available for general consumption and can be found in the damnedest places like the Library of Congress discount clearance section, in the trunks at Pick Apart, and misfiled under interesting at Amazon. Now, make sure to like our Now for Something Completely Different page on Facebook. You might find us on Twitter. Or, I tell you what, you can sign up for my still free Substack subscription, Brian Wilson Writes, and be nagged every time we come up with something more questionable to put in our content here. On that note, The two and only will likely meet up here next week. Don't say you haven't been warned. For the new rising major market media star, James Bovard, with hard-charging technical abandon from our four-on-the-floor bus driver, Joe Ted, I shall remain Brian Wilson until the epidermal wears off. And check our separate but equal ego-stroking blogs, safely locked and loaded at jimbovard.com, where there's a longer 5-minute and much more boring rendition of what Jim did at WABC, and brianwilson.net, which is what it is. Those are all the equestrian tricks we can perform for now, so pull the plug, Joe.
Thank you.